Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lorddaul.podbean.com, or you are listening to it in the most efficient way. Go to the iTunes search engine, and enter Warman Kickfighting Show. So first, I want to apologize for the gap last week. I've been having computer problems, and even as I talk to you now, I still kind of feel it's running a little bit in the background. But, you know, we're going to go ahead and do a short show today because there's a lot of big, you know, kickboxing and Muay Thai action I wanted to talk about. I'll go ahead and start with the big one, the importance of Liam Harrison versus Charlie Peters and Charlie Peters' victory. Long time ago, I got a magazine when I was here in the States, right? When I was falling in love with the sports and I wanted to know everything to do with kickboxing and I was going on in the world with World Muay Thai and so on. But, sorry, folks, I'm going to jump right in. You might have noticed a little bit of a bump or a little bit of a glitch in there. My apologies. I'll get back to what I was saying. So when I first fell in love with kickboxing and Muay Thai, I was trying to consume everything. And I'd gone to Barnes & Noble's and I would always get whatever magazine had to do with kickboxing and Muay Thai all over the world. It was just something that I really, really enjoyed. And one day I came across a magazine, and on the cover of that magazine was Liam Harrison. And first of all, I noticed it was a Muay Thai fighter on the cover of a magazine, which is extremely odd. You know, we had boxing and MMA was starting to emerge, and MMA was getting to the point where some of the muscle building, you know, the muscle magazines, they would have an MMA fighter on it because they were trying to get sales. So I was starting to see a lot more combat sports on the cover of all, you know, magazines. But in particular, there'd be a new one that would emerge. And this magazine was English-based. It came and went. I believe it was just called simply Fight Magazine or Fighter Magazine just by itself. And I'll never forget my first time going through the magazine all excited because it had nothing but Muay Thai in it. It had a couple of articles about some guys from K1. Of course, I was all about K1 at the time. But then it went into this long spread about Bad Company Jim and Liam Harrison. Now, Liam Harrison, at, you know, 19, 20 years old, was the best fighter in England. You know, he's fighting, you know, international guys already. He'd already had a lot of success in the home country. This magazine came out in, like, the mid-2000s, you know. So when I get to this magazine, I just started paying attention to everything to do with Liam. I wanted to know what was going on in his career, what he was doing. So I always followed through the fight forum, see who he was doing, see how he was competing. I went to Champions versus Champions. I was there just because it was just a huge event, you know, Spong versus Carnage and John Wayne Parr versus Bukau. It was just an awesome card. And Liam was on that card. And in that on that card, he went against Anawat. And, of course, Anawat is the, you know, huge, you know, you hear the term legend thrown around when you talk about high-level Thai fighters. You go to Thailand in particular, you're going to see a legend from every gym. But in terms of someone that was Fighter of the Year twice and was beloved and everyone wanted to see him fight, Anawat was the guy because he had a Western style. Either he won by KO or he lost in points, so everybody wanted to see him. So I watched those two fight, and in that fight, Anawat scored a lot of low kicks, and he stopped Liam with low kicks, I want to say, either in the third or the beginning of the fourth. After that fight, Liam was out for a while. I think his shin was cracked from attempting to check one of the kicks at one period of time, and then he said that he had a kind of epiphany, if you will. He was like, you know, I think maybe I should start playing with the low kicks a lot more in my game. He's already been playing with them some, but he decided that he wanted to add it so much because it what it did to slow him down early to build on what he wanted to accomplish late. So then Liam goes out there, picks up the style. His coach, Richard Smith, always had these little tricks for scoring the low kicks, for scoring it when people are off balance, to go at it quick, early, build on it to a bigger chop later. I actually went out myself as a, you know, student and coach of the game always. I went out to Leeds to learn from Richard Smith. And some of the things that he played with a low kick chop. Liam Harrison really, really adopted it well. And he started to chop people up. He won the rematch with Anawat. He had some close fights with Sanchai. He fought well internationally, you know, all over the world. Had, you know, his style was good to do both kickboxing and full rules Muay Thai. And he's just a talented guy. His Andre Kulibin fights, one of the best execution of Muay Thai fighter finding consistent low kicks that you're ever going to see. But the main reason why I say all this is because Liam was the unchallenged guy. And if you were a welterweight or someone who fought around 147 pounds or 65 kgs, you didn't want to fight Liam if you were in England. Like, you weren't, it wasn't something that people were jumping at. Like, they were getting better, and either they'd be the weight class below or the weight class above. But he wasn't getting a lot of challengers from people in the country. Enter Charlie Peters. And Charlie's got, like, almost want to compare it to how the Dutch are. Like, the confidence that he has in himself and his ability to go out there and perform on high levels, and he's a multiple-time world champion. He decided that he was going to challenge Liam Harrison. Of course, it's a big deal because Liam has been the unchallenged king for more than a decade. For most of his adult life, he has been the guy in Muay Thai in England. And when I saw this fight came about, I was slow to K1 Anoop, follow K1 Anoop. He does a really good job of kind of breaking down the lead up to this. But I was going to write a write-up on how important it is that fighters, I don't care if you fail, the attempt has to be made. If there's a number one in your country, you got to go after him. And I've said it on this podcast before in the past, this sort of thing is important. At some period of time, someone in Italy has got to be like, you know what? I'm going to go after Giorgio Petrosian with everything I got. You've got to try. But you can't just grow up and be like, it's Giorgio Petrosian, I've got no shot. Whoever the number one is in your country, you got to go after him. That's just how it is. Charlie Peters decided that he was going to be that guy. We go to the fight. Round one, clear round for Liam Harrison because there's not a lot of action, but he starts to get his low kick chop going at a slow pace, like how he always fights. He doesn't really start full speed ahead, full steam ahead. He slowly finds his moments to get the early chops, and then he builds them in the second round, and by three and four, he's full go. You're already a little bit hurt and slowed, and you're thinking about him, and he can get into his full offense at that time. He gave those that he got the low kicks, and he got round one. From not even 10 seconds into round two, Charlie Peters was on him. Came out really sharp boxing. He landed a lot of 3-2s, and he also landed a lot of uppercuts. The reason why I like Charlie Peters throwing the uppercuts is because sometimes Harrison, early in fights, has a tendency to earmuff up and then look to play the counter low kick, which means the uppercut down the middle is available a lot of times. And the size disparity between the two when they're out there, I mean, literally it looked like... Liam looked like how he always does, but Charlie Peters looks like he was 77 kgs on fight night. He just looked big and muscular and just way, way bigger than Liam Harrison on fight night. So when he started throwing his hands, he was snapping Harrison's head back. He was scoring in combos. He was very, very strong. He wasn't going down if there were opportunities for sweeps or trips. And there were a couple of times where Harrison had thrown some kicks at him. And literally, he didn't block or sweep, just the power of his stance and Liam being a little off balance. Liam was going down. The boxing scores were big in round two, so it's 1-1 after two rounds. We're going to round three. Here comes Liam Harrison. It's what you expect from all the great ones. I heard a basketball coach say at one time, they're going to go on a run because all great teams go on a run. If you've got a legend in there and you're doing rounds, at some period of time, that legend's going to find their offense. Round three, here comes Harrison. He's got the low kick game going. He's closing the distance. He's scoring with the boxing some, but really his low kick and his counter low kick game is really, really good. There's a period of time where he shot a low kick and then Peters went with a switch kick. He moved out of the way, on the lean back. He shot a low kick and counter, and then he shot another low kick because Peters didn't go back to his stance after the first one scored. Peters gave him a head nod of approval, but the low kick work and the consistency of offense that came from Liam Harrison, he took over round three. So it's 2-1 in favor of your reigning champion. Going to round four, here comes Peters. Same thing, got into the boxing. Here's where the strength started to show up. And the most important thing that happened in round four is because he was scoring so much in the boxing, because he was able to score with a body kick here and there, and because he was just so physically strong, there was a couple times, one period of time, he got into a throw situation, and he almost threw Liam Harrison out of the ring. Like, he threw him, and he went through the ropes, but he didn't crash out, on the outside. But the strength had taken over, and Harrison got away from the low kicks. So Harrison, in rounds four and five, didn't throw the low kicks that he threw 1-3. So... we go after four rounds. I had it even. I thought that all the rounds to me, I didn't think that they were close. I thought that they were clear for a particular fighter, but the whole overall fight was close. So we go into round five. Round five, up for grabs. The boxing of Charlie Peters got going early. He kept scoring 3-2s consistently throughout. His strength and his ability to walk Harrison down, his ability to take Harrison's offense, some dumps and some off-balance things that happened to Harrison while he was trying to score on Peters. I thought that round five was clear. And I really, really enjoyed the performance and the work that came from Charlie Peters, and it's what you want to see. He was extremely grateful afterwards. Kieran Kittle was the most excited coach in the world. I think he believed all along I had the fighter that could knock off the number one guy, because Harrison was champion while Kieran was still fighting. You know, like, that just shows how long he's been champion, and he was so young when he was champion. So Peters emerges. Clearly, they're going to have to do it again. This was an awesome fight. It was an epic battle. It's what you want to see from high-level guys. And it was an awesome fight in the terms of storytelling. Not all fights are going to be killing each other in a fight I'm going to talk about a little bit later. Kulabdam and Muay Thai, where both guys are just offense. They're answering each other's shots. Or not always does it have to be Zambides versus Shahid, where it's like, you land power, I land power, we land power together, like kind of exchanges. Sometimes a great story is when the champions start winning rounds, and the rounds are different than the round that happened before. This guy gets going, they dominate, they get their offense going in round one. This guy makes an adjustment, they dominate, they get their offense going in round two. Round three, champion figures out the adjustment, here they come back. And then that's how the story plays out. For me, the lead up, the confidence of Peters, and the work that we saw, that was what made this fight special. So great stuff by Liam Harrison. He's still one of the all-time greats. You guys will probably do this again. I'd love to see at least three fights out of this. You know, of course, unless Peters went two. But Peters, rightful number one in England right now. He put in the work. Congratulations. I'm going to go ahead and move to the stadiums now. And in the stadium, just going to talk about one fight in particular because they ran it back. Kulabdam gets a KO over Muay Thai. Kulabdam had slanted a series of offense that he hurt Muay Thai early in the round, and then Muay Thai tried to play a high guard, and then to his credit, it was an awesome series of offense. Kulabdam threw three wide shots, and they all landed clean, and then he threw the elbow straight down the middle, caught Muay Thai. Muay Thai goes down, and you know the writing's on the wall. But Muay Thai, all heart, gets right back up as if nothing happened, but we all know something happened. And he's trying to prove to the crowd that he's good. It's so cool to watch this fight. Again, hit up Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y, space T-I-E-S. You've got to be subscribed to him for your full rules Muay Thai action. But Kulabdam does a great job of landing the big shots, stepping back, seeing the work, and then closing in and going for it again as he lands a lot of big shots and then a straight one. He usually goes wide, 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 straight. That's how he's scoring a lot of the big KOs. When you've got somebody hurt, that's a good thing to play with. There's a lot of ways to stop people when they're hurt, but one of the good ones to play with is to throw wide shots to get the earmuffs up and then find something down the middle, or to throw something hard down the middle to get the earmuffs in the middle and then go wide. Those are just two easy ways that people, if they've got you hurt, that they look to try to get you out of there. Of the mini, those are two. He chose wide, 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 straight. He was able to score. Muay Thai goes down again. Muay Thai again. He went down for a second, popped right back up, tried to lift his hands and say he was okay. It's so cool to see Kulabdam's corner just going absolutely crazy because they know that they've got this win. And then Kulabdam goes out there, lets his hands go, and finishes it off. Once again, all heart. The ref did his best. The ref dove to like get his hand underneath the head of Muay Thai as he went down, because you know how Thai refs do it. They are all about trying to save lives in there and make sure the damage isn't as bad as it has to be because of the nature of the sport. But as he gets down there and he's like waving the fight off with his left hand and he's laying awkwardly on the ground, Muay Thai, once again, all heart, hops back up trying to say that he's okay and he can keep fighting. A lot of people say the thing that made this awesome is the fact that Muay Thai's got this, you know, cement chin, and you just keep punching him and he just isn't going anywhere because he's just so solid. But you keep cracking away at cement, it's going to break. And even guys like Mark Hunt, super chin guys that we've had in the past, you spend your whole life taking shots. Eventually, something's going to score that you're not able to take. Kulabdam, awesome fighter, was able to get offense in their first fight, was able to get offense here. He gets the stoppage victory, and we move forward. Going to go ahead and wrap this show up with some talk of another person going after a longtime king. We're going to talk about the full card. Well, I'll say that the card for the Bellator kickboxing event that's going down tomorrow. It's got a title fight on it. It was supposed to have two title fights on it with Petrosian and Chingiz Alzov. But yesterday, what I saw was a title fight. Today, I see, unless something changed, today I see is a three-rounder. I'll go ahead and talk about that last. I'll talk about some of the undercard. Ferone goes against Rafael Vitale. This is a 200-pound catchweight bout, which always makes me skeptical. Anytime I hear something's met at a catchweight and it's not like the highest level of fighting, I always wonder if someone on the card is favoring someone who's a ticket seller. But I think Ferrani will get the W there, even though Vitale is very experienced, over 60 fights. Love to see that as a pro. That one should be good. We move on to a pro card. It's got some names that you're going to hear, or a name you're particularly going to hear before. Martina Michielero. Michelle Leto, and we'll go against Gloria Piatore. Gloria Piatore is the young lady that fought Denise Kilhotz last year, and she's the last year, the year before that. But she's got history in fighting for the Bellator brand. They're going to go for women's flyweight title on the undercard. It'll probably be a three-round fight for that title. But Gloria Piatore, talented. I think she'll be able to do enough to get the W. Gaston Bolanos is going to go against Demencio Lamorno. Now, Lamorno is good. That's the young man that fought Kevin Ross last year. A lot of good kickboxing tools. I'd say that he's one of the talents that could emerge and be one that you really, really pay attention to moving forward in Italy. Italy as a country and Muay Thai, they're not as strong as I thought they were going to be. I'd say that they've always been, okay, there's a few guys at the top. And then there's a weird kind of middle ground that everybody sits in. But there's a big gap between the top and the people in the middle. But I think Lamorno has the tools to really be an excellent, excellent fighter. So I'm excited about that. And of course, Gaston Bolanos, he loves his spinning everything, spinning hook kicks, spinning back fists. He'd do spinning elbows if it wasn't kickboxing, but he has a lot of fun with it. Just a full-time fighter, fights MMA, fights full rules Thai, fights, you know, kickboxing, whatever it is, have gloves, will fight. I'm always a fan of Gaston Bolanos. And then I will go Kevin Ross versus Gabriel Varga. Took us a little bit to get to this one. It really did. And what I mean by that is both guys had untimely losses that we weren't expecting. So we had Gabriel Varga comes in with, you know, what's supposed to be his debut. He's supposed to win one. Ross is supposed to win one. Then they're supposed to do a title fight. That was the whole purpose of Varga leaving Glory and going over to Bellator. But then he took a loss early in his Bellator career. And then he ran off a couple wins afterwards. And then Kevin Ross, who had won his first few, then he ran into a loss. And just the timing just didn't work out. Kevin Ross then, I think they just decided that, okay, these guys are still world-class. They treated it like a K-1 event, essentially. You're still world-class, you just got a loss, and we're going to move forward. For me, I think that this is an all-action, fun fight that I can't wait to see. I haven't seen Gabriel Varga on form in a while, but he really does have a good kickboxing style. It's just going to be how does, you know, Kevin Ross, it just comes down to his defensive adjustments, you know, because sometimes he still plays like a Thai style, even though it's a kickboxing bout. Plays high, you know, looks for counters, looks for sweeps, looks for the kind of pacing that you get in Muay Thai. Whereas Varga is already very, very schooled in the kickboxing pacing. Combination low kick, keeps it simple, moves at you, finds his body kick and high kick in spots. He's got good solid hands and exchanges. I remember I was there live when he dropped Sergey Adamchuk with a shot. Like he's talent. I like him a lot. So that should be a really, really fun fight. I'm excited to see that one. I'm probably going to watch it both online and the broadcast tomorrow night. It's just the timeline, you know, the time zones. I don't want to know the results and then try to sit there quietly like I don't know what's going to happen in the fight. I want to see the fight. So I'll probably watch them both, but that one should be good. We wrap it up with Georgia Petrosian as he goes against Chingiz Alazov. This is the best fight of the summer so far as high-level guys going against each other in terms of history. Glory's got a really good, you know, of course you guys know I work for Glory. Our title fight next week is going to be awesome stuff. Like everybody, Alex Pieria is an awesome champion and an awesome fighter. Anytime he defends against any of the elite guys that we have in middleweight, it's always going to be really, really good. I'm excited for that matchup. I'm excited for the return of Vakadov, of course, who is, you know, our champion at 209. Excited for that. But as far as storylines go, you've got the K1 champion, the current K1 champion, against an old K1 champion. And Georgia Petrosian, who most people feel is the best kickboxer of his generation, you cannot teach the eye, the fast twitch, you know, his ability and comfort in finding who he is in combat sports. You cannot teach his understanding of distance, his quick reply to fill space, his kickboxing acumen. George Petrosian's right at the top. One of the best guys I've ever seen, ever in my life, ever. You know, top three kickboxer on anybody's list over the last 30 years, or else your list isn't good. He is that special as a talent. Go ahead and enter Chingiz Alazov, a guy who I first seen in Fight Code. He would just go out there and just run people over. He'd be the first fighter in the card, and he was just murdering people. And I remember me and Ryan Scalia, who the boxing writer, who was very much into kickboxing back in the day, used to write for Liver Kick. I remember talking about him, and you know, I'm saying, hey, man, I think this guy's got the goods. I think he's going to be the next big talent. He's absolutely killing these guys. And I remember talking about how skilled he was, and then the level of opposition kept moving up, and he kept getting Ws, and stopping a lot of these elite guys as he moved up the ranks. And I was like, okay, this is a guy to watch. For me, and I wasn't working for Glory at the time, I was like, man, who's going to sign him? You know, I had a podcast where I talked about who were the best fighters in the world that were not signed to Glory or K1 or any major organization. And Chingiz Alazov was one of the guys whose name was on that list. Chingiz is that deal. He's extremely talented from both stances. He's got power in both stances. His kickboxing acumen is pretty good. The worry that I have with him in this fight is simply Georgia Petrosian has one thing mastered. You know, the best guys in the world are doing the simple while everybody else is trying to figure out the complex to beat him. They're going to keep going doing the simple. Does he have? He's got the power, and he has a much better understanding and way more power. Well, I won't say way more power, but comparable power to what you get from the last person to beat Georgia Petrosian. He doesn't have Andy Risty's length, but he's close. I wouldn't doubt if he's a little bit longer or just as comparable, but he's got that same kind of shot. Like, he's got that same kind of violent streak. When he turns it up and he wants to get you out of there, he can do it. And I always bring up the France KO where he just got upset by the ref, like, you know, bothering him with penalties all night, and then came over and talked to him, and he goes, okay, as soon as it was done, he went out and closed the show and got a KO stoppage. That dude, when I saw that, I was like, all right, he just went power left kick, power left knee, power left kick, power left hand for a KO. He just got mad and did it, and I was like, this guy is that deal. He is very, very talented. Will he come out in the softball stance to kind of neutralize a lot of the 3-2 counters that you run into when you play orthodox with Petrosian? Maybe he does. He's got an uphill climb as far as the judges' scorecard goes, because if they moved it from 5 rounds to 3, they didn't do that for Alazov. They did that for Petrosian. And I hope it's wrong. And they could have done it for TV. That should be noted. They could have done it for TV. But, man, it's, you guys are really in for a treat. You're talking about high-level, all-time, great talent, George Petrosian, against one of the best young up-and-coming kickboxing stars on the planet, and Chingiz Alazov. It's an amazing fight. I'm excited for it. I hope the judges' decision don't ruin what's going to happen. If Petrosian gets beat clean, all judges score clean. But I don't need to hear that, you know, Petrosian's families and the judging. He has had his fair way of he's got some decisions. He's gotten a lot of wins. I don't think he's ever lost in Italy. I think he's had a great, awesome career. His only losses are in a full rules fight in Thailand, Muay Thai. That was like, what, more than a decade ago. And then the Andy Risty. Those are his two losses, and he's got the draw to Bacow. Outside of that, it has been easy for him to get some decisions. He's done well. There were some fights that I thought were closer than most people feel. The Mike Zambides fight, I thought you could make an argument that Zambides could have got a couple of those rounds. But overall, when I look at who Georgia Petrosian is, what he does skill-wise, I want tomorrow night's fight to be determined by those two athletes. And I want the judges to go according to who they feel won. But, man, I do not want, especially this fight, this high level happening here, and they took 2 rounds off of it. I'd be extremely disappointed if it was a judge's decision in the wrong way. So hopefully we get a good one. I want to thank everybody for listening. As I said before, this is going to be a short one, but I couldn't leave you guys without another kickboxing podcast. I just got busy and had computer problems, and even as I talk to you, I feel like the sound got better. So I apologize for the early problems, as we did kind of fix ourselves a little bit. Man, I appreciate everybody that listens to this podcast. I'll do another one next week when I'm out in New York. Again, I'm only going to break down the glory cards from the perspective of what each talent brings to the fight card, like what they bring to the competition. And I'm going to leave predictions out of it. And then after the fight, I'm going to talk about the action and what I saw. But I do my best to just give you the facts of the action in the ring and not so much talk about, you know, what this person did or what this person didn't do. My podcast for Glory Events, as I work for them, is to talk about the athletes and the action. Narratives are going to be a little bit harder for that one. It's easier for me to do a narrative here. It's easier for me to talk about judges' decision here, you know, when I'm talking about the Italy's history of being in the favor of their athletes when it comes to close fights. But it happens all over Europe. No place worse than Spain. I've brought up many examples from that before. But next week when I talk about Glory, I'll try to keep it to fighters, fight action. Today, I want you guys to make sure you get your weekend fill of kickboxing and watch Bellator kickboxing event. They've hurt themselves a little bit because they haven't been on TV as much, you know, or sometimes the events happening in Europe, people will see the fights, and then by the time the actual card comes on, everybody's already saw it online. It's just a new day of media. But do your best to watch it in both places and support kickboxing. I really do love it. I really do love the sport, and I'm excited for all of the athletes who have put their life on the line to pursue the sport that they love. I want to thank everybody for listening to this podcast. God bless, and I look forward to continue to bring you kickboxing action for years to come.